Well, this is tragic.
Negative world. Listen to the podcast now. We're all just here to talk about some stuff. Negative world. Everybody join in now. If you would like to, you can sing along. Negative world, dancing like a monkey now. Fade outs are awesome, 'cause you can sing whatever you want. Nobody can hear you.
Hello, and welcome to the episode 007 of the Negative World Podcast. We are recording this on Wednesday, April 13th, and I am your host, Guillaume, and with me today I have...
Deathly Hallows, and I'm going to be talking about Ridge Racer 3DS.
My name is Chidetno Sankor, and I'm going to be talking about Metroid games and how they're kind of more linear than they used to be.
Hey everybody, JKR here, and I'm going to be discussing mobile gaming versus traditional gaming.
Awesome.
So what about that
name of yours? I think it's pretty funny.
Yeah, about my name. You've noticed that I haven't introduced myself as Pandarius. I guess, the cat's out of the bag. I'm not actually named Pandarius. I simply, for various reasons, I changed my pseudonym on the Negative World boards to my actual first name. So... it doesn't really make any sense to keep calling myself Pandarius on the podcast, so I guess you guys will have to get used to calling me Guillaume. And that's pretty much it. There's no big story behind it, I guess.
I can get used to that.
You should make up a story, at least. Pirates stole your identity
okay.
Or something.
Thanks. I didn't want to mention the Witness Protection Program.
Oh, but, I'm sorry. Was that a secret? Okay. Nothing. I don't know what you're talking about.
All right. I'll edit that out. So that's one first thing that I wanted to say. A second thing is that last time we did a 3DS special so big and so special that it had to be cut in two parts. And I think that most people listen to both parts. But there's, like, I'm new to this whole podcasting thing, and especially the whole putting it on iTunes thing. And so when I put it on iTunes, I turned on iTunes, and it automatically downloaded the podcast for me. To my horror, I saw that it only automatically downloaded part two. And when I checked my statistics for that day, much later, I saw that indeed a whole lot of people only downloaded part two. So if you guys weren't, I guess like I made it a little bit too subtle, perhaps. Like there was only like a dash two at the end of the file name. So maybe you weren't aware that you were missing the first part of that last episode. But please go check and go download the part one. Probably the best part. I'm just saying that because I'm trying to get you to listen to it. But
That definitely happened to me. I downloaded the second part, and I was really confused because it was like right in the middle, and I figured it out later. So I listened to them both, but in reverse. It was great.
And I guess the third thing I want to mention is that maybe you've noticed... actually, I'm not sure if I'm going to put it at the end or at the beginning of the podcast, but you've noticed that we've got lyrics to this theme song that we usually play. Those were recorded over a couple of days by JKR here. So, why don't you... actually, JKR... like you've got your own, it's not your first time recording in a studio a song and everything.
It just sounds like it.
Yeah, I guess so. Huh? So JKR, also formerly known as CubeTunes creator on IGN.
The place that shall not be named, correct?
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Right, website that shall not be named. Yeah,
exactly.
So where did the CubeTunes creator name come from?
Well, I originally picked the CubeTunes creator because I started doing CubeTunes for Matt, and he said, hey, pick a board name, and I didn't have the handle on JKR yet, so I just went ahead and labeled it whatever people would recognize what I was doing.
Awesome. But now CubeTunes is long gone.
Yes, it has retired.
But you're still doing webcomics.
Here and there. My main thing now is animation, and you can check that out at fredthemonkey.com anytime you want. I have a huge cartoon coming up on Friday, so hey, just in time to do the podcast and plug it at the same time. I appreciate you letting me do that.
All right, no problem. I'm actually expecting, you know, to benefit a whole lot more from you plugging the podcast and your website.
Oh, I see, I see. Here, I just thought you were here for my sparkling conversation.
There is always a price.
Terrible.
Yep. Well, we did get a boost when Triforce Bun plugged the podcast and his website. The unfortunate thing is that he didn't mention that it was kind of a, I don't know, kind of for grown-ups or something.
What happened? I never heard of this.
Oh, well, you know, like his webcomic is very...
Rated E for everyone.
Right. Yeah, definitely, which is great, but that means that he's got like a large demographic, I guess, from anywhere from like 9 to 90. And so we did get like a stray 11-year-old pop-up on the boards, the negative board boards. And those boards are not for kids, I guess. They're not moderated for swear words and stuff. And yeah, but I think that the little guy probably realized that, and I don't think he's still sticking around.
All right, so I'll just have a disclaimer real quick. All you Fred the Monkey listeners, don't go to that evil, evil forum because, you know, it's not cool. No. But if you are of age, then feel free to stop by because it's a cool place.
Awesome. All right. Let's get right into the topics. Yeah, we're going to start with my own topic, which I completely forgot to introduce. Here it is, the Virtual Console. We're doing this thing right now called the Retro Game Club. Again, completely stolen from Nintendo World Report, but whatever. So we're playing Wonder Boy right now on the Sega Master System, and it's kind of awesome. And it's a game that I probably would never have played otherwise if it hadn't been on the Virtual Console. I never knew anyone growing up who had a Sega Master System. And yeah, I basically realized that there was like this gem that I had never played that I'm playing right now for the first time that I absolutely love. The state of the Virtual Console right now is a little bit... Well, it's not doing too well, I guess. There used to be a time when 4 games a week was the norm. And right now, it's more like 1 game in 4 weeks is the norm. That's quite a shift of pace. But there's a ton of great games already on the service. I think there's over like 450. Or that might be in Japan. I haven't actually
done close to that.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
I want to ask you quickly if you guys are still even paying attention to the service. If you guys are playing any games or... If the fact that the well has dried up, I guess, has completely put the Virtual Console out of your minds.
Not anymore. Like, I used to buy a lot of games when it first came out, like when there was no WiiWare, all we had was the Virtual Console. So I bought a lot of games, but now it kind of died. I don't know. Like, I don't really care anymore about the whole Nintendo download thing. There's never anything good, so I just, you know... Stopped caring, pretty much.
And did you get into WiiWare at all?
Yeah, I did, but it also kind of died. You know, there's never any games, especially now that the Bitrip games are over. There's nothing left on WiiWare.
Yeah, that's basically my thinking as well. Now, like, it really feels like maybe once, like, La Mulana, I'm not sure how to pronounce it, comes out, there's basically not really any...
Yeah. When that comes out in 2025, maybe it'll be better. But, you know, also Super Meat Boy got canceled. That other game, River City Rampage, something like that, that got canceled too. So, I don't know.
Yeah, it feels like a lot of the best games have been poached by, like, Xbox Live or, like, PlayStation Network.
Right. Did River City Ransom actually get canceled, though? I thought that it was just delayed until like the end of the summer.
I wouldn't count on it coming out on Wii.
I think it's going to be... Isn't it going to be part of like some kind of Microsoft like summer of Xbox Live thing, so it's probably going to be exclusive for at least a little while?
Yeah, but those actually only, like, I think the window of exclusivity is only like a month. Like, I think that the Tomb Raider game that came out on XBLA was part of some promotion like that, and it was only delayed for a month before it was on PSN.
Yeah, so, but that Castlevania game never came out on PSN, damn it.
What Castlevania game?
The crazy 2D one. It was like the HD 2D that had all the characters from the GBA games and like from like Symphony of the Night.
You guys remember?
It was like a multiplayer. It seemed like kind of weird. Like I had people had mixed reactions to it. A lot of people didn't like it, but I thought it looked really cool. So
yeah, I was, like, a friend of mine, I think, downloaded that.
Yeah, I was waiting for that game to come out on PSN, but it never did. So
okay, well, all this to say that I think that WiiWare is pretty much dried up as well. So I was like, what better time is there to dig up all these from the Virtual Console that maybe we missed the first time around?
Yeah, I know. I've pretty much stopped paying attention to the Virtual Console on the Wii, but I am anxiously awaiting the new Virtual Console on the 3DS, just because maybe it's new like the Wii Virtual Console used to be. Because I was really excited for the VC on the Wii in the beginning, and then slowly
the VC
over
was
time.
In the beginning was great. Like going back and playing all those old games again, like playing, like downloading, even just like the original Legend of Zelda and stuff was amazing.
Yeah, sure. But I don't know. Like, man, you guys are breaking my heart.
Well, the novelty, for me, the novelty wore off kind of quick because I played a bunch of games and then I realized these games are hard and I don't like this kind of gaming anymore. Like Ninja Gaiden and Milan Secret Castle and stuff like that. I was like, I don't know if I want to devote this much time to this now when I have all these other games that I haven't even opened yet. Like, you know, my stack of, like, shame.
I guess so, but like if you picked Ninja Gaiden and what was the other one? Oh, Myland's Secret Castle.
Yeah,
maybe you went a little bit too. Yeah. Those are notoriously difficult.
Those are especially hard games,
but they're also awesome games that are really fun to revisit. But yeah, hard.
True. So you guys, like, did you only download games that you had already played before, or did you manage to make new discoveries from time to time back when you used the service?
I mostly downloaded things that I already knew and loved, but I did play Pulseman on the Sega Genesis. I don't know if you guys heard about that. I played on the Virtual Console. I think it only came out in Japan.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah,
awesome.
That's a great game. It's a great game, and I first discovered it on the VC.
Yeah, and it's like it's made by the Pokemon guys.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Game Freak.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Wow. I played Sin and Punishment. I had never played that before because it was, again, Japan.
Oh, me too. I did the same thing, yeah.
So I still haven't played Sin and Punishment.
And I also think I downloaded the first Paper Mario for the N64, but I never actually got around to playing it, much like many of my gaming purchases.
It's a good game.
I never had a Genesis, so I downloaded a bunch of... I downloaded, like, Altered Beast and Echo the Dolphin and Sonic the Hedgehog and games that I never really played when I was a kid. And those were great. Really fun.
Yeah.
All right, cool. And what about, like, consoles that you had perhaps never even heard of when you were a kid or, like, you had never seen for real in a while, like the TurboGrafx or the Sega Master System? You guys weren't even curious a little bit?
I think those were added later, and I think by that point I was kind of over the retro gaming phase that I went through. So for me, I didn't really download any of those.
Yeah, none of them really caught my eye, I guess.
Ah, man. I can't I can't believe I'm the only one who's my interest in retro gaming, I guess, comes and goes, but right now, like, it's in full force. Because, like, Wonder Boy on the Sega Master System is awesome. Like, I can't... Like, I actually reviewed it for the website, and I absolutely stand by that 9 out of 10 score that I gave it.
It's a great game. I played that back in the day. Yeah.
All right, cool.
Just a quick recap. What kind of game is it?
Well, it's like an arcade platformer.
Okay.
And
it's kind of like Bit Trip Runner, almost, because you have to dodge things.
Yeah, basically, because, like, okay, so it's not auto-scrolling, but it does have, like, this timer that always ticks down. Well, it's like your vitality meter, and you always have to keep eating fruit that appear in the levels So that to replenish that vitality meter. So you always have to keep moving. And that makes for like a really fast-paced platformer.
Right. And you can throw hammers at people.
You can throw... I don't know if they're hammers or tomahawks or whatever.
I can't remember. I played it a long time ago. But yeah, there's something like hammers. And you throw guys, it's fun.
Yeah, so like I'm enjoying that at least as much as I've been enjoying BitTrip Runner, and that's just like it's the kind of like great discovery that you make that makes you think like wow, like these games today that I really enjoy, they really aren't really inventing anything. They're just picking a concept that's already been done before and that's been done well, but they put their own spin on it, and it was just like a kind of a thrill, you know, to discover. Like, I don't think in interviews I've ever heard the Gaijin game guys ever say that Adventure Island or Wonder Boy were inspirations for BitTrip Runner, but it wouldn't surprise me at all. It's the same kind of fast-paced gameplay, the same kind of concept. Like, it feels... They feel like brothers, you know? I don't know how to say it, but they feel very, very similar. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, Wonder Boy is still a treat to play today.
Great music, too.
Well, opinions varies on that one. I heard some people watch the video I posted on Negative World say that, they weren't really fans. Yeah, on that Virtual Console High, I was like, wow, I need me some new platformers. I need to discover more of these. And I went ahead and downloaded AlexKidd, which is another Sega Master System that I've heard being pimped by this guy on IGN who did like back when they had the retro gaming section. Yeah, the guy loved that game as a kid, and I went ahead and downloaded it 2 days ago. And yeah, I'm not so much a fan of that one. It's I won't really go into any details, but basically it's not quite the thrill to play that Wonder Boy is. But yeah, like there are still games coming out for the service, you know. Like there's a Super Bunk that came out recently, and I've also downloaded that, and it's kind of amazing. Like back in the day, I guess that the selection at my video store was not too vast, and there's a lot of these games that I simply never played before that perhaps you guys played back in the day, but these are completely new to me. And Super Bunk in particular, like I'm not even sure if I can say that it's good. I'm not even sure if I can recommend it, but my God, it's like super trippy. I've never seen a weirder, like it's the weirdest game I've ever seen.
Is that the one where he turns into like a robot and he has sort of like jets, or that's like Z-Bonk or something?
Oh, that might be like Air Zonk.
Air Zonk, okay. Sorry.
No, it's all right. But he does.
I'm trying to remember. I remember the original, the first Bonk, and that was great.
Yeah, well, in Super Bonk, like you can grab different power-ups. Like there's like a blue candy that makes you get bigger, and you occupy maybe like a sixth of the screen. It's pretty impressive. And there's like another power-up that makes you smaller. So I guess new Super Mario Brothers never really invented anything. There's different types of power-ups that transform you, like and they'll have different effects if you're small, if you're normal-sized, or if you're big. Like there's one where you become some sort of Godzilla that can destroy buildings with his tail, or with another power-up, like you become a giant ostrich. Like it doesn't make any sense at all, but it's pretty awesome.
Sweet. Yeah, there's probably a ton of games on the VC that I haven't even played, but I don't know, like I have no interest in it. Like there's no hype surrounding it. I wake up on Monday mornings and I don't remember to look up the Nintendo download, you know?
Yeah, I think they need to just every once in a while throw the you know, mass market a bone, and then people would start jumping back on the bandwagon, but it's been so long without something big that you just start forgetting.
Well, I think if they offer demos, that would also be a really big help, because a lot of these games I would love to try, but even though they're $5, you know, you buy five games for $5, it's like $25. It's like, So, but I would totally download 5 demos and then try. And then if there's something that really, like, I really vibed with, then I would pay for it, you know?
Yeah, right. These are good points.
They do have demos, but only for WiiWare, I think.
Right. Yeah, for Virtual Console, it seems like it'd be so easy. It's like you have 10 minutes to play this game or 20 minutes, and then it's deactivated or something. Because you could download the entire game. It wouldn't be like a memory issue.
Like they did in Smash Brothers, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, the whole demo in the virtual, not virtual console, but WiiWare thing is really poorly handled, though. Like, I don't know if you guys ever tried downloading any demos off there, but unlike on PSN, when you download the demo, it's like a completely separate thing from the game. And usually on PSN, like if you download the demo for a small game, then if you buy it, you only download like a small key or something.
Yeah, you just click buy it, and all of a sudden you have it. Yeah.
Yeah, but like when on WiiWare, like it's two separate downloads, and you can't like download the rest of the game from the demo. You can access the Wii Shop, but it's just again, like it's not gonna automatically erase the demo that you've downloaded to make space for the full game. So people who don't have an SD card might be like, it's a cumbersome process.
Yeah, you have to delete the channel and then re-download an entire new channel, basically.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. And also, there's usually no saves. So if you made a lot of progress in the Liltline demo, for instance, which is like half the game, then you know you download the full game and all that progress is gone.
Well, certainly something to keep in mind for the next system whenever that comes around.
Yeah, for eShop, I wonder how they're going to handle that. I hope they do have demos because that'd make a huge difference, I think.
Yeah, well, they've mentioned it, but again, it's Nintendo. I'm not sure that we can actually believe what they say without seeing it first.
Well, they might have some demos, but I kind of feel like you need to have a demo for every game. Just like even on PSN, it's not the same as Xbox Live, where you expect there's a demo, and I think just having that like kind of peace of mind, you know, you can try any game on the entire service is like a really great thing.
Yeah, I agree.
And even without the demo thing, like the whole way that Nintendo has been handling the Virtual Console, like it's really been. Like, releasing a press release every week is just doesn't cut it, you know? Like, I can't believe that there's no video that you could see on day one on the Wii Shop for each of these games, you know? Like, we should have been able to see immediately, like, what the game was about. And, like, even in the press releases, like, they really didn't feel like they put that much effort into them because, like... Right now, like I mean, just a few minutes ago, Gelatinous surprised you guys by saying, like, Pulseman was by the guys from, you know, who made Pokemon.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I had been the one writing that press release, like, Pokemon would, like, the word would have been, like, at least, like, 10 times in, like, the first paragraph.
Yeah.
Because, like, what the hell? How else are you going to sell, like, a $9, $9 Genesis... game, you know, like it's I don't know, like make people interested in the games because there are a ton of interesting games on there.
Yeah, it's what I was saying before. I wake up in Monday morning and I don't remember to go on the internet and look up the press release, you know? I just forget. Like there's no hype surrounding it, nothing. You know?
Yeah, once upon a time that was my Monday routine every Monday.
Yeah,
morning.
I remember it used to be a big deal, so exciting. In the beginning, in like in the first year or so, it was like...
I remembered, I checked the Smash Brothers Dojo, and I look up the Nintendo download.
Exactly.
And you guys don't even check Ludus' thread on the Negative World? Every Monday, he puts it up there?
I sort of post it on Twitter, but I don't really read it.
Oh.
I occasionally stop by, but I'm just not expecting anything at this point. So
I check for DSiWare basically because that's the I do download DSiWare titles, but I haven't in a while because I haven't had anything good. But I'm more likely to do that for some reason, maybe because I played the DS more than the Wii. I don't know.
All right, and quickly, I guess like we can finish with our hopes for the Virtual Console for the 3DS. What games do you guys hope to see on there?
Pokemon, please. That
really?
Needs to be there. That needs to be there. Yeah. Pokemon Red and Blue and Gold and Silver, definitely.
Okay, but like, weren't there remakes of Gold and Silver on the DS recently and everything?
True, but you can take the original versions on the go. You know, you can download them. It'd be nice. I would buy them.
Definitely. All right.
Maybe release. Maybe release the third version, like Pokemon Crystal, and just make it one game. You don't need to release, you know, two of the same games on the downloadable service.
And how would you catch them all?
That's true. I don't know.
I mean, obviously everybody who plays those games needs desperately to catch them all. And that
of course.
Eliminate
that's
that.
The point of the game.
I want Metroid 2, but I have that on cart, but I still want it, you know?
Yeah, and for me, I don't think there's any specific game that I'm like looking forward to. It's more that endless possibility that still exists before, you know, they start releasing stuff I've never heard of and I lose interest.
That's a really good point, yeah.
Well, like on day one, like supposedly Super Mario Land and Link's Awakening are going to be available. I guess I hope you guys are going to be downloading at least that.
I'll definitely download Super Mario Land.
And I've never played the Kid Icarus game.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Oh man.
So, although I've heard it's not that great, but I would still love to check it out.
I'm really crossing my fingers that at least like the obvious titles that Nintendo probably owns the rights to, like so, these days you're never sure because of the whole Rare thing. But like I hope that the ones that Nintendo actually owns are all going to be available at some point, and sooner rather than later. Because like right now we're still waiting for Pilot Wings 64 on the Virtual Console, and so I wonder how long we would have to wait to get like something obvious like Kid Icarus on the handheld Virtual Console.
Yeah, it's like here, newsflash, Nintendo, because I know you're listening to this podcast. You should release Pilot Wings 64 alongside of Pilot Wings Resort.
Exactly.
Because
yeah.
They're going to cross pollinate, and you're going to get more sales of both.
Ah, but they used to do that. They did that with Super Metroid and
right.
And
it worked. Super, I mean, I bought stuff because
Super
of
Smash
that.
Brothers, maybe. I don't know. I don't remember.
Did
they do it with Super Smash Brothers and then the 64?
I actually, Brawl.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that the Virtual Console, the N64 game came out much later than Brawl.
Yeah, I think so too.
Mm.
They should give you like a free download code if you buy, like as an incentive to buy. Like if you buy the new Kid Icarus, then you get like the download code or Icarus.
That'd
you know,
be
to
pretty
get,
awesome.
To get the Game Boy game, or that'd be amazing.
Yeah,
that'd be sweet.
We imagined all these things back when the Virtual Console and the Wii came out, and none of them
came never
to pass.
Yeah.
Do you think there'll be GBA games? Because they haven't really confirmed that, right?
Oh, of course. They're just waiting.
Because that would really excite me more than Game Boy and Game Boy Color, I think. Because those games, I think they hold up a little better. I still, you know, there's a lot of GBA games that I would definitely be interested in playing.
I think they'll probably wait like they did with the Virtual Console, where one day they just suddenly pulled out some new consoles for the VC and were like, hey, look, something new. So they'll probably do that with the GBA.
Yeah, probably. They're trying to trickle the releases so that we buy more of them, I guess. Same as they did with the Wii.
One game I am looking forward to, and they really need to release, is the Donkey Kong 94, or whatever you call it, for the Game Boy Color. Maybe it was a GBA game? I can't remember.
It was Super Game Boy.
Yeah, it was original Game Boy. It was like the best Donkey Kong game I've ever played in my life. So that one will be a day one for me if they do release it on the new VC.
I'm a little bit disappointed that I'm apparently the only one who's still got some sort of interest at all in the Virtual Console still. But whatever.
Yeah, I will definitely one day when I have that magic time thing again go through and just go crazy on it, because there's a lot of stuff I'd love to play, but I gotta balance that time thing, and right now it's not at the top of the list. So
cool. Well, let's move on to a topic that has everyone excited, the 3DS.
Yeah.
And Deathly Hallows. Why don't you introduce us your topic?
Sure. This sort of dovetails with what we were just talking about, because the whole like time constraint, because I find myself now being primarily a handheld gamer, because the games, you can play them in short bursts, and a lot of them are designed that way. So the 3DS like had me super duper excited, because the DS is probably my main system. So, you know, day one 3DS, I went out and I got it. I got a bunch of launch titles. And I know you guys had a really great podcast last week that discussed a bunch of the different titles. But you never talked about Ridge Racer, which I'd like to talk about tonight. But before I get into Ridge Racer, I would like to say that you're not alone in loving Steel Diver. Steel Diver is a great game. It's awesome. Like everything you said about it is true. It's too short. I mean, there's no reason why there shouldn't be like 20 levels instead of 6 or 7 or whatever they have. It's like, but in, the concept's really great. I love the opening theme music, and I think the whole like vibe of it is amazing, and it's really, really, really fun to play. So it's just one, it's one of those things that I think like it, that didn't really deserve the $40 price tag. And, like, if it was a downloadable title for like 10 or 15 bucks, I think it would be totally amazing.
Well, it would be like easier to recommend, surely.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, yeah, I just want to say this quickly. Like the, maybe I'm not playing the game as often as I thought I would, but when I do, I really enjoy it. Like, there is a problem though with the way that it's made, because like the fact that it includes the gyroscopes in the gameplay occasionally, like even if you play the missions where it's like all touchscreen based, then between missions, there's like the periscope mode that comes into play. So it's like you can't really start playing it in the bus or wherever. So
Well, you can't use touchscreen for those, for the gyroscope sections.
Yeah, have you tried that?
It's really hard.
Yeah.
So you lose fast. But I don't there's no penalty for sinking though, right? That's what I've never been able to figure out. It's like I just die in those sections and then I move on to the next section.
No, that's true. It's when you manage to kill enemy ships, you get how do you say that? Decals.
Right.
Decals. And and then like I don't know if you've collected enough of them, but when you've collected enough of one kind, then you can put it on your sub, and it's gonna have some sort of special effect. Oh. Like maybe like you're gonna take half damage from mines or something
So you can plow through the mines.
Yeah, basically. And it's a cool game. I just wish that it were a little bit more portable friendly, I guess.
Yeah. Well, you know, I hope it's one of those things that ends up like in the bargain bins, where people pick it up later down the line. Because I really would like for $20, I would say definitely get it. It's great.
So, all right.
But then on to Ridge Racer. And Ridge Racer is a great game. And I think it's the best launch title, which it really surprised me because I've always been a Ridge Racer fan. And I was really looking forward to the 3DS version, but I didn't have like super high hopes for it. Because
One did.
Yeah, well, right. Namco in the past has been pretty lazy about just kind of recycling their old levels and slapping them together in a different order and like their old music. And they had it on the PSP as a launch title, and when I first saw the 3DS version running like in videos, I was like, oh, that's just the PSP version, but they're just going to call it 3D, and there's going to be no improvements or like no new tracks or anything like that. But it's not true at all. It's like it's a really well-polished game, and it's really well thought out, and it has a great selection of tracks and a great selection of music and amazing cars and amazing graphics and super tight controls, and the AI is much better than previous Ridge Racer games, and they've really tweaked the kind of nitro, like, because you know it's an arcade racer, but you focus heavy on drifting. Like you slide around the corners, and as you're doing that, you build up nitro, so then you can boost. So the whole thing becomes sort of like a strategy of like you want to go as fast as you can and take the corners as fast as you can, drifting in order to build up your boost, so you can boost again till you get to the next corner, and then drift as fast as you can to build up your boost, and then drift, and then boost, and then drift again, like rinse and repeat. But it becomes almost like a puzzle game. Like you have to have a strategy of like how you're going to get around the track as fast enough. And they've really like kind of ran with that, so you can tweak your build on your car. You can change the kind of boost you have, and you can have it build up faster when you're going through curves, which could help sort of advance a player, or you can have it just kind of build up at a steady rate, so then it's like building up all the time, and it's easier to build boost, but then you don't get rewarded for going as fast as you could, which makes it more dangerous, because you know, of course, the faster you're going, the bigger chance you have of wrecking to the wall or whatever. So there's a lot of strategy, and there's like a lot of technique involved, and it's actually like a really like fun, like deep racing game. It's very involving, and it's been really entertaining for me. And it's a great game to just pick up for 5 minutes because the races are short, but it's not a shallow game at all. You know, it's really challenging, it's really deep, and it's really fun. And presentation-wise, I think it's like it's a really great example of 3D. Just, I don't know if it necessarily improves gameplay. Like, I can't really tell if that's the case or not, but it definitely, the presentation really blows your mind because you're going so fast and there's like stuff coming at you on the screen, and like there's all these particle effects. Like if you run through water, like droplets splash up on the screen, or if you go through like dirt will fly up, or there's all kinds of like graffiti, and like there's stuff in the air that's coming at you, and there's like helicopters and jet planes like zooming above you. It's just like all of those effects are amazing, and it's really kind of like this roller coaster ride. So it's really impressive, and it's fun, and it's kind of a great game to show your friends too, because it's easy enough that anyone can sort of pick it up and play it on the slower levels, and the 3D effects are really like extreme. Which I guess is like a lot of people have complained that it makes them nauseous, and I can sort of see that, because if you turn it up all the way, it really is just kind of like in your face. But I turn it up all the way, and I really, really enjoy it.
Actually, a lot of people are saying that it's the best 3D on the system. I've heard that from a lot of people.
I think it's, you know, I think that...
like out of the games that came out really so far?
Yeah. It just, I think it's definitely like, because Pilot Wings is great, because when you're close to things, you can kind of see relationship to them. Like when you're landing on with the rocket belt, and you're on the little pads, refueling pads, like that. Yep. Kind of thing. But sometimes you're just in the air, so it's like it's just more like your little toy plane is like floating. But Ridge Racer, since you're on the track and there's like a constant line off into the horizon of following the road, it really does give you the sense that things are like, it's really, really deep. Like one of my favorite levels is just Giant Canyon. And you're going up these like huge mountains, and then you're coming down, and you see like into the valley of like this big canyon, sort of like Grand Canyon, like red rocks and like waterfalls and stuff. And it's like, it's just like the vista goes on forever. It looks really, really cool. And there's another track that's sort of like almost like Bavarian like landscape with like mountains off in the distance and like green hills, and like the mountains are like kind of looming, and like it's really like grandiose and like beautiful. It's like amazing.
I think you've almost sold me on it.
Yeah, that sounds really interesting, actually.
I highly, highly recommend it. I think it's like, you know, I like Street Fighter is another game that I think's of similar caliber. Like it and just the fact that it's so polished and like such a great package. But I don't really like fighting games as much, so I love Street Fighter. But it's, you know, but for me, it doesn't, I don't really like appreciate it in the same way as I do Ridge Racer. It's just easy. Ridge Racer is easier for me to play. But it's like that level of like, I think, you know, both of those games are great examples of like I feel like Namco took it really seriously, and they really tried to put out like the best package they can. I mean, it's not perfect. There are a few glitches, and sometimes the menus are confusing, and there are a lot of menus, and there's like kind of loading times, and you can tell it's still a launch title. It's not absolutely perfect, but you know, you can tell that they also like really took it seriously and tried to make a really great game, and I think they're really successful. It's a great game.
So I have a question for you. Considering the customization, how simple versus complex is it? Like you said, you can change it so that your drifts get you more nitro and things like that. Is it a point-based system, or is it just kind of like little squares that say more of this and more of that, or...
Yeah, it's actually really simple. There are a couple levels of customization. One of them is purely cosmetic. There are a bunch of different cars you can buy. Some of them you unlock, and then some of them you buy, and they all have different stats, like their top speed, and there's three different kind of drifts. There's mild, standard, dynamic, and dynamic being the hardest to control, standard being normal, and mild being for like for easier for beginning players. But then each one of those cars that you buy will have a lot of cosmetic options. Like there's usually three different skins, which is like kind of like the details in the paint job. And then you can also change the kind of paint job, like metallic ink or matte or special, or there's a bunch of different kinds of paint. And then each one of those paint jobs has a bunch of different colors too. So you can kind of like, that's just like pure cosmetic fun. Like you can trick it out and make it look really, really cool. Like there's like I'd like to do metallic and then choose like this kind of like champagne gold, because it looks like the old like Legend of Zelda like cartridge, like, and it's like ridiculously reflective. Like it reflects it, like everything, and that's one of the cool things about the game is like the reflections in the cars are really cool. Like if you're driving through like the mountains, like you'll see the mountains reflected on the hood of your car. So I'm always driving around like this bright gold car. But then as far as performance, like you have three different kinds of nitrous boost to choose from, and then as you earn points for completing challenges, you can buy more. You can buy like a whole nother set of nitrous that will just basically improve like your car. So it's not like a ton of customization. It's just basically like a couple different choices you make, and then you can buy upgrades.
So they kind of stuck with the arcade nature and didn't take it too simmy.
Yeah, it's not, you know, it's not like the old Need for Speed games where it was like a million menus and like.
Yeah,
it's,
I hated
it's
not those.
yeah, me too. It's just enough that you can kind of for a long, long time I didn't mess with the different nitrous levels at all until I realized that like, oh wait a second, like if I choose this one, it's like I can actually win this race because what happened was that. Street passed. When you do your street pass, you can download the ghost from the person that you passed. Mm-hmm. And it's happened to me twice that I've gotten ghosts from different people. And the first time, the guy was really slow, obviously a beginner, and like I played a lot of Ridge Racer on PSP, so I was already pretty good at it. So I just creamed him. It was no big deal. But the second ghost I got, I looked at his time, and it was like 10 seconds better than mine on like one of my favorite tracks. And I was just like, how is this guy doing that? So then it wasn't really until that happened that I started going in and tweaking the boost and like trying to figure out like, oh, this you know, track has a lot of straightaways. I don't want to use this kind of boost because I won't be gaining enough nitrous because there's not enough curves, like that kind of thing. So it's not super complex, but there's enough there that adds a little bit of meat to the game and makes it feel like, you know, like a little bit more strategic, like you're thinking. It's not just like, you know, It's like Mario Kart, sort of. Like Mario Kart has the items that adds that extra little level of like strategy,
right?
You know, but it's not like over the top.
Oh, that's good. Sounds cool.
Yeah,
right. Ridge Racer sleeper hit of the year, it seems.
One of my pet peeves in racing games is rubber band AI. Is there any of that in there?
Yeah, well, it's actually really interesting because Ridge Racer before didn't really have rubber band AI at all. It basically, you would always start last in a group of like 8 or 12 cars, and then you would just overtake them. But they would just be kind of traveling around like dogs on a track, like just in a circle, like at the same speed. So it's basically racing against the track. It wasn't really, you didn't have to really worry about them that much. Like every now and then, I think when they introduced Nitrous in the PSP version, and I think that carried over to Ridge Racer 6 and 7 on the 360 and PS3, they would boost. So you had to be careful, like maybe you would pass a guy and then he'd boost and pass you and you'd be like, oh, you have to think about that. But in this game, they totally added like rubber band AI and they made the drivers really, really aggressive, which is probably one of the worst things about the game because it's really frustrating because sometimes that feels cheap. But if you pass someone, they will like, and you can't really monitor, like, should they have that much nitrous? I don't know, because is the computer cheating by letting them boost an infinite amount of times? Because sometimes it just seems like you pass someone, and then there's like a little like announcer throughout the game that I think that Namco calls like the DJ. But she's a little bit annoying, but she's actually kind of funny too. But she'll say something like, uh-oh, you made an enemy now. And then, like, 2 seconds later, the guy will have caught up to you, and he will, like, ram you off the road. So you have to be, like, really, really careful. And it's not, like, you're not even worried about him anymore. You're just worried about passing the next guy. Like, if you're in second place now and you're trying to pass the leader, but the guy in third place keeps bumping into the back of your car, like, trying to run you off the road, it feels really, really cheap, and it's really frustrating.
That sounds like real life.
Yeah. But so you have to. So basically now it's just, like you just have to go. You have to just go as fast as possible at all times and just be super aggressive. So to stay out in front of everyone. So, but there is that rubber band thing. So if that frustrates you, that'll probably frustrate you a little bit in this game too.
Mm. But still, like the whole like, how would you describe the speed? Like, how does it compare to something like F-Zero, which is probably my racing game, like my favorite racing game?
I think it's actually really similar to F-Zero. It's not as fast, but for a car racing game, it's ridiculously fast. Like there's four levels, and it starts out on level 4, which is the slowest. It feels pretty fast, but not that fast. And then when it moves to 3, it gets much, much faster. And now I just unlocked 2, and 2 is ridiculously fast. I hate to see 1. But that's the way Ridge Racer games have traditionally been. They get, like, extremely, extremely fast. Like, your car is going in excess of, like, 200 miles per hour, and it seems to be pretty realistic. But I guess in F-Zero, you're supposed to be going 400 or, at some point or something, so it's not that fast. But it's pretty. But for a car game, it's really fast.
I certainly sold me on it.
I think everyone should check it out. I really highly recommend it.
I'm really interested in it now.
Awesome.
Yeah, I've got a confession to make. I've never played a Ridge Racer game. Probably people noticed that when I said that it was made by Konami on the last podcast.
Oh, right. I remember that. I was like, no. His name couldn't die. But, yeah, it's, you know, if you've never played Ridge Racer, it's a little bit frustrating in the beginning because the way the cars control is really unnatural. Like, you have to get used to the drifting mechanics. It's all about drifting. It's like, so if you do pick up the game, don't get, like, discouraged in the first, like, 20 minutes you play. Once you, it almost auto-steers. It's really hard to explain, but you kind of tap the brake and you go into the curve and you do these ridiculous slides at, like, a million miles per hour with, like, sparks flying everywhere and stuff. It's like, once you get used to that, like, dynamic, it's really, really, really fun.
All right. Are we ready to move on to the next topic?
Yeah, let's move on, because I talked a while on that, so I don't think we need to talk about Resident Evil, but I would like to say that that new trailer looked
awesome. Oh, right.
It's fine. Like, I just want to say that trailer looks awesome, and I wasn't excited about that game at all, and now I'm really excited, and I can't wait for it to come out. I hope it comes out tomorrow.
Yeah, the fact that it has co-op is just like, it blew me away. I was really excited about that.
As far as the 3DS goes, I can't wait for Star Fox 64.
Mm, definitely.
That's one of my favorite games of all time, so.
Yeah, that's a great game. It's going to be so pretty. I can't wait. And that one looks like it has a much bigger graphical overhaul than the Zelda game.
Yeah, definitely.
The only thing I've seen, though, was the intro. Is that really... Oh, no, wait. No,
They showed the level 1, I think.
Right, mm-hmm. With a boss that I couldn't even recognize for some reason.
It was like the Walker, but it was like five polygons on the N64, so it looked totally...
It looks like Star Fox Assault, almost. It looks really good.
So, I guess that we'll move on to the next topic. JKR, why don't you introduce us your non-controversial topic?
I am so going to disagree with you on this one.
All right. Well, I'll try and keep mine a little short. But yeah, I just wanted to kind of talk about mobile gaming versus traditional gaming. And to bring everybody up to speed, Nintendo President Iwata, I can't pronounce his first name, it's like Sweet Lou or something. So Sweet Lou, he kind of made a slight to mobile gaming developers at the Game Developer Conference keynote speech, essentially telling them that they were destroying the industry. So I thought we might take a look at the pros and cons for both the developers and the consumers. Just kind of walk through a few things and see where we end up. So let's go ahead and start with the pros. And anybody feel free to jump in anytime I take a breath if you have a point to add. But the pros for consumers, I think, is pretty obvious. We kind of have it made right now because we have 1,000 choices just at our fingertips, and it's instantaneous because, you know, I can only really speak for the iPhone because that's where I do most of my mobile gaming, but, you know, you browse through the App Store and you see something and just, bam, it's in your hands and you're good to go. And a lot of times, it's either dirt cheap or it's free. So, hello, yes, thank you. I will take an infinite number of games for free. I don't mind that at all. And I don't have to trek into GameStop to have them tell me to pre-order things just to get stuff. So that's a nice thing, too. On top of that, I have that the games for these systems are really simple. And they're fun because, just like the NES days, they have to be fun. They can't rely on superb graphics and story because it's just not as capable as some of the other machines. So they boil down the fun to things like Angry Birds and Words with Friends, which has taken over my life. And so you're going to have a lot of really fun games. And those are the main pros that I have for consumers. Is there any that anybody else thinks are really good for us?
I don't think that there are that many iOS games that are that fun, though. Like, for my personal taste, I really feel like I appreciate the distribution model and the way that it has kind of a sliding scale in terms of, like, pricing. But I feel like the games that are really great are few and far between, and for me it's mainly because of the controls. Unless it's something that's like a puzzle game or like Words with Friends where it's like it's easy to manipulate with a touchscreen, I find myself getting really frustrated. Like when it has the virtual D-pad or the virtual like analog sticks.
Yeah, I think
it usually never works.
Absolutely. Right. You have to have a game that's developed for it. And that's something that people are growing into, because in the beginning it was all, hey, we made games before, so let's just jam them on this new system and see what happens. And it doesn't work. You can't put a D-pad on the touchscreen. But when you have those games like Cut the Rope, which are so specifically designed for a touchscreen in mind, then it's just brilliant, and there's nothing quite like it.
Am I the only one here who doesn't have an iPhone or an iPod Touch?
Guess so, yeah.
Wow. Okay. Well, I'll let you guys talk then. I gotta agree with the sentiment that from the outside, anyway, it doesn't look like that many games are that great. Like Words with Friends and Angry Birds are names that I keep hearing. I guess because they're really like the cream of the crop.
Yeah, they're standouts, but they're the exception to the rule, of course. But I guess the thing is that again, you have so much that it doesn't all have to be AAA titles, because if you don't like something, another one is instantly at your fingertips. And if you don't like that, there's another dozen waiting in line for you. So in the pros category, you just have so many options.
And there's a ton of great games too. Like, not just the classic ones like Angry Birds, Cut the Rope, but there's stuff like iDracula, which I don't know if you played that, but I'm completely addicted to that game.
Oh, that's a twin-stick shooter, right?
Yeah, it's kind of like Geometry Wars, sort of. But you're like some guy shooting at monsters and vampires and stuff. And you got tons of weapons, and the controls work really well on the touchscreen. It's a great game.
Yeah, you're going to find a lot of those. because there's so many, of course, the trick is to find the ones that are good. But if you just talk to other people who have an iPhone or an Android machine and say, hey, are there any games that you found that maybe the public hasn't caught on to yet? They'll recommend you maybe three or four. There's one called Mr. Ah, I think, that is super simple because you just touch the screen to jump off a little rope and land on a platform. But it's brilliant and it's really, really fun. So while everybody knows about the Angry Birds and the Words with Friends, there are still a lot of really good ones that just haven't hit mainstream like those two have.
Have you guys heard
about... Yeah, and also the App Store is like really well designed and organized. Like if you go into the top charts, like chances are you're going to find something you like there.
Definitely.
You know, and you can go into the free games or the paid games and you can select from those. So it's a really great system to get you to play a lot of games.
That's true. It's amazing. If you switch from like going to the DSi store to that, it's like, oh my God. It's like, it's so fast and there's so many things and it's so clear. It's like so magic. Easy to, you just click on it and then it downloads immediately. It's like so easy.
Yeah, they know what they're doing over there.
You don't have to put in your credit card information, like all that stuff.
Which
like,
can be a little dangerous because suddenly
it can be dangerous, but I would kill for Nintendo to just have a unified system that remembered who you are instead of it being tied to the, you know?
Yeah.
Instead of being tied to individual handheld or whatever, and just have like the same thing Apple has, like you have your Apple ID, like they have a Nintendo ID, and like I can buy Super Metroid and play it on any Nintendo system I have. Like that would be amazing.
Oh, I think down the road maybe, but right now that's kind of a pipe dream for Nintendo. So
We have to take baby steps. Baby steps.
Yeah, that's like light years into the future for Nintendo.
But have you guys heard about Sword and Sorcery? I think that's a new iPad game.
I have not.
I've heard about that.
I've heard a lot about it. They were talking about it on Weekend Confirmed, and I remember seeing screenshots for a long time ago. Like it's really beautiful, like pixel art, like kind of hand drawn, but kind of like 8-bit looking. Oh. And it's supposed to be like amazing music and like a really good story. And I haven't picked it up yet. I don't have an iPad, and I don't know if it's only for iPad.
It's only an iPad.
I'm not sure, but it sounds like the kind of game you'd want to play on iPad because it's all about the presentation and like the atmosphere and the story and like the sense of discovery, so...
Yeah, it's on iPad only. And also, like, there's a built-in feature that you can basically tweet any line of dialogue that is in the game.
That's fun.
And I'm not so sure.
Oh, yeah, I remember the tweeting thing.
Yeah, I'm on Twitter occasionally, and people don't realize that perhaps like a line sounds really witty or, you know, really funny in context, but when they tweet it, like I just don't care. It's not that funny. It's
right.
I mean,
but it's still a cool little thing to have, I think.
Well, basically, of course, like they did it for publicity, you know, because then you have the hashtag Swarcery at the end of each and every one of these lines.
Oh, it adds it automatically.
Yeah, so people like automatically like it's visibility for your game, so good for them. But people abuse it, I think, and they tweet like really, really mundane lines of dialogue. In my opinion,
well, it sounds like you're following the wrong people.
Yeah,
I guess so.
It's not like Uncharted, which you just tweet everything like automatically. It's like they have to choose each line and hit the button right to make it happen. So,
right, but too easy and
Twitteria, it's their fault.
I guess so.
All right. Well, jumping over to the developers real quick to talk about their pros. Obviously, they have dramatically lower production costs, and you can make these games with really small teams because it's so much word of mouth. You have next to no marketing budget, really, because people are just rating it. So if you make something good, and hopefully it catches on. So you save millions of dollars in the fact that there's no marketing. And the turnaround time is ridiculously fast. You know, for most games these days, you have 3 to 4 years in development, whereas these games, you can churn them out in a couple months at max. And to be frank, as we discussed, your competition mostly sucks. So, you know, an average game can suddenly become a blockbuster game because right now the competition is a lot of people who are trying to jump on a bandwagon, but they don't know what they're doing. So maybe, you know, in reality, maybe Angry Birds isn't so great. It is a lot of fun, but maybe it's not as great as it seems.
I don't like it, but it's good.
Yeah, but because there's so much essentially garbage around it, it's like, wow, that's pretty nice. So that's definitely a plus for them.
But looking at it from the developer's perspective, like it's the App Store is a great place for you to make your first game and, you know, not take many risks. You know, you just put it on there, and if it does well, great, and if it doesn't, well, you know, you didn't really lose much.
Exactly.
I think it makes a lot of sense if you're a developer, you know, a new developer to make a game on the iPhone.
Right, and even if you're not, you know, technically a developer, because, I mean, I've toyed around with making a game. Thankfully, my wife is a programmer, so she helped a lot. But it's something that anybody can do. So, and like you said, there's just very little risk involved, and it's definitely a nice place for developers to go.
Right. I mean, it may not be great for the gamers, but looking from the developer's perspective, it's perfect, I think.
Yeah. Well, again, it has cons and pros for both sides. So let's move on to the cons for the developers. And the cons for the developers, I think, are a little less apparent because the developers are so excited and it's booming right now. What they're not doing is looking down the road. And I think that's the difference between Nintendo and a lot of these mobile developers. Not to be mean to the mobile developers, but they're kind of the teenagers here, and they think that they know a little bit more than they do. So considering some of the cons, which may be a little bit more long-term, you have like the Nintendo Blue Ocean strategy. They produced the Wii so that they could kind of get themselves out of this market that was just nothing but ships and blood in the water. Well, very quickly, the App Store is becoming a sea of blood because there is so much stuff that there's just no water left. And it's just becoming more and more crowded every day. At the same time, these breakout top sellers are really the vast exception to the rule instead of the rule themselves. So you have Angry Birds, which sells 50 bajillion copies. But for every Angry Birds, you have 700 other games that maybe sells 5 copies. Nobody hears about the 5 copy games. They hear about Angry Birds, so everybody keeps jumping on the bandwagon. Then you have the fact that there's really not a lot of consideration for long-term or what I would call an empire-building concept. 20 years from now, Angry Birds is not going to be Mario. You're not going to have spin-offs of Angry Birds in 20 years like Mario Sports or Mario Golf.
No, of course, but it never intended to be that, I don't think.
Right, but that's something you have to think about as a developer. Because if you're really into this, not just for the quick buck, which most developers seem to be, I mean, some of them certainly are, but that's something that, you know, it's like a bubble. It's going to burst eventually, and you kind of have to think about that while you're in the process.
Hey, they have Angry Birds plushies now.
Oh, yeah, so I've seen
them. They're expanding.
Well, we'll see how many of those end up at the Goodwill store. But
when they do decide to make another game, like if they just say from the creators of Angry Birds, like that's going to help, definitely.
Definitely, but that's the trick. They're going to have to say from the creator of Angry Birds. You have Nintendo, which is not from the creator of Mario and from the creator of Zelda, it's Nintendo. And so, do you know the name of the people who make Angry Birds? Because I would venture that most people do not know their name. And
Chilingo,
that's
how I have no idea.
You know, I don't even.
It's Chilingo.
Something like that. I looked it up earlier and then I forgot to write it in my notes.
That might be the publisher, though. I can't remember if that's the publisher or the developer.
So that's
Rovio?
Yeah, Rovio. That's it.
Yeah, Rovio. Yeah.
So that's something that, you know, maybe they're not thinking about quite enough. The fact that, you know, especially with the App Store. The App Store doesn't really have advertising as much, so you can't put from the maker of Angry Birds. You'd have to put it in the title. And so somebody sees your logo or they see your company name, you have to change your name to Angry Birds now, or else nobody's going to know who it is.
Angry Birds Cart.
Yeah, or something. Done. So the other thing I have in the developer's cons, which again is a more long-term thing, is that the cheaper and cheaper that these things get, and the fact that now we're being flooded with free games, means that you're destroying your only revenue source. You can have things like Farmville, which you pay money for fake money in the game, but how long is that going to last? Because when the App Store started out, you had a lot of apps that were like $5.99. And, you know, $5.99, that's pretty cheap. $6, sure, I'll totally go for that. But then suddenly came along the $3.99.
Now it's pretty expensive.
Oh, yeah, it's pretty cheap. Exactly. And so then you get the 99-cent apps. And, man, that was brilliant because who doesn't have a dollar? I can't even go get a cheeseburger at McDonald's for a dollar or can't get it for 99 cents because they're a dollar. So I'll pay 99 cents any day of the week. But those 99-cent apps just destroyed the $6 apps. And I think that's what Nintendo really sees here. They see the fact that when you start giving stuff away for cheaper and cheaper and undercutting your competitor in that way, you're essentially screwing yourself over later on because everybody's going to keep doing that. A big thing that I can point to is the newspaper industry. The newspaper industry is certainly not growing right now. It is almost on its way out, depending on who you ask. It's not doomed. They could turn it around. But right now, it's in big trouble. And the reason for that is because they started giving away information for free. Well, that's the same thing that's happening with these games. Right now on my iPhone, that gets 90% of the playtime on my iPhone, is a game, I think it's just called Smurfs. But it's essentially Farmville with Smurfs. And it combines my childhood with
the
addiction of Farmville. Yeah, it is pretty awesome. Because
it's Capcom, right? I think it's Smurf Village.
Yeah, Smurf Village, that's it. And my wife downloaded it, but of course I got addicted to it. So it was free. It's absolutely free. And if it's on my phone and I'm turning it on and harvesting crops every once in a while, then I'm not going to go buy Angry Birds Part 5 or 6 or whatever they're on now. So suddenly their market is being screwed over by themselves. And eventually that kind of leads to the destruction of your entire industry. And that's
so basically what you're saying is, let's take a game like Steel Diver, for example. You're saying that a lot of people are saying, oh, Steel Diver for $40, that's a lot. Like, they're saying that because of stuff like Angry Birds?
Absolutely. But, I mean, I think they would still say that otherwise, but maybe if that was $30...
Like, it helps.
Yeah, if that was $30 instead of $40, if everything else was $40 and that was $30, then you'd be like, well, at least it's $10 off because it's smaller. But because you can get longer experiences on the iPhone for 99 cents, $30 now seems like a crazy amount of money. It's the same principle as when you were a kid and you got $20, and that $20 was like, wow, I'm rich. And then when you get older and get a job, you're like, $20, yeah, I'll just go blow that on something. It's no big deal. So it's that kind of thing.
I was listening to the BitMob podcast recently, and they had like a bunch of industry people, mostly from Farmville. Well, no, actually, no one actually involved with Farmville was on the podcast, but there was a guy from, what are they called? Bejeweled.
PopCap.
Oh, yeah,
PopCap, right. And he was explaining how, you know, like their whole business was basically like $10, $20 games. I think that when Plants vs. Zombies came out, it was $20 on Steam. Or maybe 10, I'm not sure.
No, it was definitely more than that because I got it for like 10, and I honestly, after I played it, I would have spent 50 on it because it was brilliant. But anyway.
Right. So, like, their games are pretty affordable. I think we would all agree, like, even though it's not exactly $1. But then, like, the same guy was saying how... actually, he said that when Bejeweled 3 came out, or Bejeweled Twist, or whatever the latest one is, and they put like that $15 or $20 price tag on it, like people were like cursing them out. Like they were like, why the hell isn't this on my iPhone? And, you know, why are you selling this on PC and Mac? And why is this $20 instead of $5? And, you know, so like even though they aren't originally an iPhone developer, like they get affected like that, and it affects their the way people perceive their products on other platforms.
Yeah, definitely.
And like the same guy was saying how like he barely touches his PSP anymore, but like lately he heard a lot of great things about that Tactics Ogre remake that came out. And you know, like that's I haven't played it yet, but like it's supposed to be a phenomenal game, like a phenomenal remake from the same guy who did the original. Like that guy has like over 20 years of experience in the industry. He had like a pretty big budget, I think, to do what he wanted, like a pretty big team. And okay, so they sell that on the PSP for like $30 or $40. And, you know, like he was saying, oh, $30. You know, maybe I don't really want this anymore. So even though, like, as a developer, he was affected by the, you know, 99 cents apps, and, like, he was saying that, yeah, it's not good for us. At the same time, as a consumer, like, he couldn't really get himself to pay $30 for a portable game anymore.
Definitely. Yeah, for better or for worse, it's changed our perceptions of how much games should cost.
Yep. And again, there's a lot of betters and there's a lot of worses, so it depends on your perspective on there. And then finally, I'll just close with the really only con to the consumer that I can find. I sat here pondering because really it's we're pretty good except for this one little tiny detail, and that is the fact that what I would call real games are in grave danger, like you just mentioned, where we don't want to spend $30 on a handheld game because we can get one for 99 cents. Mm-hmm. The more that happens, the less $30 games we get, the less $40 games we get, and certainly the less $50 games we get. So while we may still get our Call of Duties and our Maddens, we're going to lose a whole lot of quirky big games that maybe, you know, aren't going to happen anymore. And that's a real sad thing for those of us who grew up with those games and who aren't just completely satisfied by Farmville and Smurf Village, because I still want my Pilot Wings and I still want my Zeldas.
That might be true for handheld games, but I don't see console games suffering too much from that.
Well, like, I think it's a matter of long term. I think I totally agree with you. Right now, there's absolutely no issues. But you think about the fact that the kids growing up right now are dramatically exposed to these 99-cent games and essentially these throwaway games that don't really mean much to them. They're not going to grow up with the Marios and Zeldas as much. They're going to grow up with the Angry Birds and the Cut the Ropes. So while right now, yeah, we're still fine. Everything is okay. I think that the reason that Iwata brought up the point was that he sees that long-term thing where somewhere down the line, we're going to have to start thinking about this because it's going to start a ripple effect. And while you drop the little droplet of water right here, it doesn't do much. That wave eventually takes out, you know, cities. So that,
yeah. And right now, like, the iPhone is a strong handheld competitor. Like, it's not just, oh, cell phone games, you know?
Right, exactly.
It's a handheld system. I think it's almost on par with the PSP and the DS and the 3DS now.
Yeah, and
I mean,
so
a lot of people are playing it, and a lot of gamers are taking it seriously also.
And all it'll take is the iPad start competing with the consoles, and then suddenly the iPad becomes the iPhone version of the handheld thing. So, you know, one little thing, and suddly the whole console industry could be screwed.
You're saying it takes one Angry Birds on iPad to, like, overthrow the consoles?
I wouldn't call it one Angry Birds because, you know, Angry Birds didn't do this. Because PopCap, you know, PopCap did this before. They had affordable gaming, and everybody loved that, but it didn't destroy the things around it. The problem is that now Angry Birds and things like it are becoming so frequent. PopCap was more one of a kind. PopCap was the exception to the rule. Now the rule is suddenly becoming something very different. And so that's where things run into some issues.
I think it's also from the consumer point of view, it could be like a really good thing because it's going to force Nintendo and Sony and the bigger companies to really kind of prove to us why these games are more expensive. And I think they can do it because it's like the 3DS, like it has like tactile controls. It has all these cool features that they can, you know, that they can leverage against the iPhone apps and say like these games are better. Like, we have a longer pedigree, we know what we're doing, like we're going to release, like, new Super Mario Brothers, and it's $40, and it's worth $40. And I think that if they can win that battle and get the consumers on their side, then it's, I mean, better games for us because they really, you know, it's forcing them to compete.
Yeah, that's if they can win that battle, and that is a difficult battle to win. So time will tell, I guess, but for the moment,
I think they can do it. Come on, Nintendo.
Yes, we will cheer them on because I certainly would love to see them do it, and that would mean a renaissance of gaming because they would have to step it up. But at the same time, you know, they are businesses, and those businesses run on models of we need to make profits to make the shareholders happy. And it's not always about trying to best them in games, it's trying to best them in profit. So it's
I think
dangerous
they'll eventually find like a level of quality of game and price. I think the price will come down and then the quality will go up and they'll get the sweet spot where it's just like, I'd rather pay $20 for, like, you know, Steel Diver 2 than 99 cents for some crap on iPhone.
Yeah. Well, let's
like hope. I think they can reach that, you know.
I think most of us agree with you in that. Okay, well that's what I have for that segment.
Awesome. That was a good topic.
Right.
Thanks.
I expected a little bit more Nintendo talk, but whatever. I felt left out.
We love our iPhones.
Well, I in my notes I did have a couple more points where, you know, Nintendo is the big grumpy old man who kept telling the kids to get off of his lawn, but I kind of cut those from when I was talking, so I wasn't rambling too much. So let's get back on a very Nintendo topic.
Hey, I was supposed to do that segue.
Sorry.
Yeah, let's move on to something purely Nintendo. Jidathan Desankor, why don't you present your topic?
Yeah, I'm going to be talking about Metroid games, which, you know, last time I was on the podcast, I talked about Pokemon, so now it only makes sense to bring up Metroid, which is my second favorite franchise of all time. And basically, the main thing I wanted to touch upon is that Metroid games are becoming more and more streamlined and linear than they were in the past. You know,
no way.
What? Yeah.
No way.
I know, right? Shocking. You know? So, yeah. So you have, like, the classic games, which were all about exploration, you know, Metroid on the Nintendo and Super Metroid. And Metroid 2 was also like that. And even the Brain games, they had a lot of backtracking. But then it all started going... Well, I don't want to say downhill because it's not necessarily worse, but when Metroid Fusion came around, it had like a mission-based gameplay where you would go to navigation rooms and they would basically blink up a spot on the map where you needed to go, which is, they sort of did it like that too in Metroid Prime, but in Fusion, it was like you were taking orders, sort of, from your dead mentor, Adam Malkovich, and it, that also carried on to Metroid Other M, which a lot of people complain about that one, you know, being very linear, and I sort of agree. You know, it almost, Other M especially, was almost like an action game with some exploration in it, and some optional exploration, like to get, I don't know, missile tanks and energy tanks, you know, and that's going pretty far from what the original games did. And even Prime 3, I don't know if you remember that, but it was a lot more linear than the other two. And mm-hmm. I mean a lot more. Like, yeah, you basically had many different small planets. It was almost impossible to get lost. So, like, a lot of fans, myself included, are usually against that. But it also, I've seen that it attracts a lot of other gamers that wouldn't be interested in the series otherwise. Like, I've talked to a lot of people that said, like, I don't know, I asked them their opinion on Prime 3, and they would tell me, yeah, it's much better because Prime 1 and 2, I would just get bored. But on Prime 3, there's constant action, and it's much better. So, yeah, it's kind of, that's kind of a debate that I wanted to bring up with you guys, like, get your take on it. Do you think the series is better off being more action-packed, or would you prefer it to be more exploration-based like the older games?
Well, I personally would say that I didn't find it more action. Like, I can only speak for Fusion, or I can speak for other ones, but specifically on Fusion, because I know a lot of Metroid fans were not big fans of Fusion, but I adored that game. I absolutely loved it. And I didn't feel that it was constant action. I just liked the fact that I knew where I was going. And I understand the exploration aspect. I mean, that's totally a big part of the games. And yeah, Fusion lost that a bit. But I just was really gripped by that game. And I think a lot of it had to do with, you know, the alternate Samus. Because when she showed up, I was scared out of my mind because she would just wreck you. And so it just, I just really like that aspect of it, I guess. And so I didn't mind the fact that it was a little bit more linear.
Yeah, to Fusion, right. To Fusion, I gotta give that it has a lot more story than the previous games. And of course, again, Other M expanded on that. But it had like a lot more dialogue. And that was really interesting. Like, I gotta give it that. But the fact that it didn't have much exploration, coupled with the fact that a lot of power-ups and a lot of gameplay elements were ripped out of Super Metroid.
Right.
You know, it didn't have that big, that as big of an impact on me as other previous games did. And yeah. Other M is just way much, a much bigger offender in that sense than Fusion.
Right.
I don't know if you guys like Other M, but like it takes a lot of risks in that sense.
Like, it's not just like the Metroid series that's becoming more and more linear or directed. It looks like it's in, like, the whole, like, gaming as a whole seems to be more and more streamlined. Like, even, like, in any genre, it looks like, you know, like, FPS games back in the day, like, back when the big names were Castle Wolfenstein and Doom. I mean, those were very much exploration-based. You had to find
and
the
so
exit.
So much better.
and now, you know, like the Call of Duties and stuff.
Sorry.
It's basically you're on a straight line to whatever your objective is. And there's always like some sort of arrow pointing in the right direction. And it's not just Metroid, it seems.
Yeah,
and
I don't know if you guys have played WoW at all, but I used to play a long time ago, and then I jumped back in when the last expansion came out. And they now added the feature where it tells you exactly where to go for quests. And I both liked it and disliked it because it kind of closed the world off a lot, but at the same time, it made my life easier. So I can understand why they do it, but also why it kind of ruins some things.
It's all in the name of accessibility.
Right.
You know, they want more people to be able to enjoy the game, and some people don't have the patience to like figure out where to go. Like, if you take a gamer who's never played the original Metroid on NES that didn't even have a map, and you have them play that, they get so frustrated immediately. Like, even people who enjoy retro gaming, they think that game is so hard, I can't believe people like that. If especially if like Super Metroid was your first game, because just the addition of the map made it so much more like feasible to get from a point A to point B.
Yeah, definitely. And I guess that the thing is, a lot of us started playing, you know, at a really young age with the NES, like who were maybe like 6, 8 years old or something, and like Metroid maybe was, or Zelda were the only game that we had for that Christmas.
Exactly.
Like we had to play it for months, you know, because like next Christmas
right.
was a year away, so like what else were
you
going
to
do?
Like it.
Yeah. Can you imagine the original Zelda where they had a line telling you how to get to the next dungeon?
It would have been a much shorter game, for sure.
It would have been messed up.
I'm sure that when I was a kid, I would play Zelda for like 2 hours and get nothing done, you know?
But that was okay then, you know? I mean, it was like, hey, it's only 2 hours. I don't have anything else to do. Now, it's like, I don't want to say the kids because I sound like an old man, but they have a million things to do, or whoever, the gamers. They just have so much that they can do. And it's like you said, that was the only game we had for 6 months. I feel really old. Thanks, guys.
Yeah.
See,
and also,
I really like Fusion a lot because since it's a handheld game, the fact that they told you where to go like sort of broke up the game into these like 10-minute chunks that you could do on the bus or whatever. So I feel like I sort of had a good excuse because it was like it wasn't made for console. It wasn't a port. It was an original handheld 2D Metro game. So the fact that like it was a little bit more guided was okay. But I think that in Other M, it was really offensive. Like, because it's you expect when you sit down, it's a console game, you want to be able to have a little bit of freedom, but the fact that you were taking orders from Malcolm, like, practically the entire game, is just like, you know, it was just like you really felt, like,
right.
stifled and restricted. Like, you weren't yourself. Like, you weren't the same as you were used to being.
Right, I guess you have a point there. Like, in a handheld game, you want to say, like, I don't know, I'll play up until the next navigation room, and then I'll turn it off. You don't do that so much with console games.
Right.
You want to sit down and actually immerse yourself in the game.
And the whole portable thing is a good point because a lot of people play their portables like maybe twice a year when they have like a big plane trip or something. And so like if you're going to be putting down a Metroid game for a couple of months and when you pick it back up, you want to know exactly where to go next. And I guess that wasn't a problem on the NES, but like on the Game Boy, you want to be... Yeah, you want someone to tell you exactly where you're supposed to go because you probably don't remember. I mean, for us, like mm-hmm. we perhaps like played through these games in like a couple of hours because we love Metroid games. But I think that for a lot of people, handheld gaming is a whole lot more casual, and so they basically pick up a game before a big trip and they're going to be playing it on the plane on the way there, and they're going to be playing it on the plane on the way back. And that's it.
Yeah, that was one thing that I think the Professor Layton games really nailed. Before you start every single time, there's just two images with a little bit of text that says, here's what was just happening in this game, in case you put it down for a little while. Yeah, it's great.
This is one of the reasons why Other M is a bigger offender in your eyes, because
yeah.
it's a console game, so we're supposed to, like, we're not supposed to put it down for a couple of months or a couple of weeks. And
right. When I first played Fusion, like, I was coming off of Super Metroid, so I gotta admit, I was a bit underwhelmed, you know? But at the same time, it wasn't the GBA, so I have lower standards for that, but coming from Prime 3 to Other M was a bit disappointing. Yeah, it was a fun game, but I don't know. It just wasn't that good. And, yeah, the whole linear thing is a bit more annoying on a console game.
So do you Definitely. Think that they could have kept all the story they wanted to implement and still made it less obtrusive?
I don't know. You have a point there, but I wasn't a fan of the story either, so we could have got that and I would be happy.
Yeah.
Right, I really like the idea of a deeper story on the Metroid universe, but I kind of wanted them to touch more on like the Chozo and the origins of Samus. Like, that, I think, would have been a much more interesting than hearing about Adam Malkovich and the Galactic Federation.
Yep.
Like, I don't care that much about that.
True. And like, that's a good point about, like, the conflict between the story and the non-linear aspect, because basically Samus is on a mission. She's trying to find someone who's eliminating all the team members. She probably doesn't have time to waste on looking for doodads all over the place. So on the one hand, yeah, like it's very frustrating when you're trying to go off the beaten path and like the game won't even allow you. But at the same time, it
Exactly.
makes sense because she's not supposed to be wasting time in the first place.
It makes sense
But
as far as the story goes, but like when I played as a gamer, I don't want to see so many invisible walls and so many locked doors, especially on a Metroid
oh yeah.
game, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially
Invisible
towards
walls
the.
suck.
Yeah,
I know, those locked doors don't make any sense at all because she would just destroy them.
Other M had a lot of invisible walls. Like, it had a lot of areas that looked huge when you walked on them, but they were basically a hallway, pretty much.
Well, you were on those weird rails. Like, you would try to run off into the distance and you would automatically curve. And you'd be like, no, I want to go that way. Like, it couldn't make up its mind if it was a 2D game or a 3D game, which I also thought was frustrating.
I kind
Right.
of like that. There were a couple of points, though, where it was more frustrating because they did allow you to veer a little bit, off the beaten path. But yeah, it was a very, very strangely designed game.
I just felt like every room you had to sort of reassess what you were allowed to do.
Yep, that's true.
Wasn't
Like,
enough
okay, where's the camera
consistency,
going to
maybe?
pan in this room? And is this full 3D environment? Is this 2D? Yeah, I was just like, I really just wanted it to be like, my favorite parts were the more 2D like angle from the camera, and I just wanted it to be like that. Like if they just made the whole game like a classic Metroid, but all like polygonal graphics and like, that'd have been amazing. Which is what I hope they do for the 3DS, actually.
Yeah,
Yeah,
let's have a
that'd be nice.
3DS a Metroid, please.
I would like that.
You hear that, Nintendo?
They need to have like the story, and they need to give you like all games are linear. It's about like giving the like sort of illusion of freedom. They need to give you like a little bit more of that illusion that you have like the choice to go where you want to go and explore. At the same time, have a coherent narrative and a little bit of guidance, so it's not frustrating for players who aren't so advanced.
Right, I think the
It's a
hint
really
system
hard
in
balance
Metroid
to strike
Prime
when you
was
think about it.
perfect.
Yeah, I do too. I think Metroid Prime is probably like in my for my taste, that was probably the perfect like balance between all of those things.
I think it's the best Metroid game. And also, the hint system was great. And also, you could turn it off if you wanted to, I think.
Yep, you could.
So that was perfect, I think.
Yeah, like it's helpful. Like as I said earlier, like we're not kids anymore. We do like we've got busy lives. We want to move on to the next game, perhaps. And so, like I did enjoy the whole hint system in the Metroid Prime games because I just don't have that kind of time anymore to wander around. Like it becomes tedious at some point. And really, I'm not sure exactly how we did it back then. Just trying to burn every bush in The Legend of Zelda, or trying to bomb every wall
That's all you
in
had to
Metroid.
do. I mean, it was like, well, I can do
That was
that
so
or
fun.
go outside, and I don't want to do that, so.
I hear you. Are we perhaps like giving? I don't know. Am I the only one who really enjoyed the combat in the Other M, though?
I liked it, sort of.
Yeah, and when you play on the hard mode, all of a sudden, it's like a completely new game because you don't have any upgrades.
Yeah.
You absolutely have to use the whole dodging mechanic
That's
as well as you can. And
yeah. That's sort of the problem to me. Like the dodge mechanic and the like lethal strikes, I think we're called, like the melee attacks. Those were cool, but they were good ideas, but they were sort of so simple. They were all basically run up to the enemy and hold up the charge beam, you know? I think they could have done more with that.
So like combos, would you
Right.
want like,
Right,
rotate
I mean,
stick down to up, push AB?
I don't want them to make a Metroid Gaiden, but if they're gonna make a melee system, like they could have maybe deepened it a little more than they did. I think there were two or
I
three
wasn't a
different
fan. I guess
attacks.
I feel like I'm sticking the mud a bit. I just wanted to shoot stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, it'd be like if Mega Man just started punching people in
Right,
the face.
and also the game had a lot of like really weird and stupid decisions, like not being able to fire missiles without going into first person. That was just stupid. I mean, I don't see any
That
reason
was
why that.
frustrating.
Like, I don't get it. Like, why do I need to aim to fire a missile? Like, there's not enough buttons in the controller. I don't know.
Well, there weren't.
Yeah.
That's a
You could use
fact.
the B trigger, maybe. I don't think they use that for anything in third person view.
Right, but it's not exactly, I guess, obvious that you can use the
Right.
trigger, and it would be too easy to just press it by
There was this
accident, I guess.
fun console I used to play. It was called the NES, and it had two buttons, and for some reason it still worked. So I don't want to buy that whole, we don't have enough buttons to use, because that's nonsense.
Samus and Metroid, Other M, can do a little bit more than she can do
I'll give you that,
NES
but
game.
Still, I think that they could have made it a little more intuitive and not you have to hold down six buttons just to do one thing.
And it's a good game, but when you consider that the franchise also has games like Super Metroid and Metroid Prime, like it just can't compete. Like, it's not in that league, in my opinion.
It's held to a higher standard than as if it was just a normal game. It wasn't Metroid. It'd be like, wow, this is pretty cool. But with Metroid, you got a lot to live up to. So good luck.
And also the whole like,
what do you guys think they're going to do next?
That's a good question.
That's a really good question. I have no idea.
Neither.
I think Metroid on the Wii is done. Like, they're not going to make a new Metroid for the Wii.
Yeah, that would make sense.
Yeah, but it's going to be so hard for them to go. Like, are they going to go back to first person? Are they going to do, like, another 2D game? Like it's just, you know, I feel like they've kind of, like, worked themselves into this corner now. Yeah. I'm really hoping they go back to the 2D. I really just want another 2D game. I've been waiting since Fusion to get, like, you know, or Zero Mission, I guess. But
I think that... Donkey Kong Country Returns and Kirby's Epic Yarn and Wario Land, they kind of point to the fact that Nintendo's not adverse to jumping back to a good old 2D. So I don't think that it's...
I don't know, it's not fair. Like, all those franchises got the 2D treatment that Metroid deserves, damn it.
just wait for it. It's going to be like side-scrolling 2D on the 3DS, and at some points you're going to have to find this one little clue, like this one little blotch of green blood and a green background by holding the 3DS, and it's going to make use of the gyroscopes, and then when you find it, you're going to be able to move
bring
on.
It on.
That sounds all right.
Yeah, and also the whole like taking orders from Adam to use your like power-ups.
Yeah,
like
that was dumb. That was
it. Didn't change the game. It didn't change the gameplay at all. But it was, you know, when you immerse yourself into the game and you have to believe that Samus is taking orders from Adam Malkovich after going through Super Metroid and the three Prime games, it's kind of silly, you know.
Well, they had to have some way of taking away your powers,
right? Well, they could have had like some huge monster rip apart your armor like they did in the Prime. And then it would have been fine.
I know it's cliche and it's been done before, but I'd rather have her get hit by a boulder or something and be malfunctioning, you know?
Yeah, it's weird though.
Or maybe
so many
when,
people
when,
are like, oh, new stuff, but then new stuff comes and it's like, no.
Maybe when Mother...
Maybe she just has all her stuff at the beginning and she gets new stuff, yeah.
Right. Maybe they could have made it where in the beginning, or it's the beginning of the game and the end of Super Metroid, where when Mother Brain attacks you and the baby Metroid saves you, maybe that explosion could have taken away your powers somehow. You know, they could have done that, and you'd be left with the bombs and the missiles and the charge beam. And
well, I guess
definitely they could have found something like that. They could have found you something better than stupid Adam Malkovich.
I think the good news is that they got a lot of feedback from that, so I don't think that we're going to see that same principle applied again. So that's good.
Let's hope. Or hope they're listening. All right. So I guess that's the podcast then.
Sweet.
Cool. Awesome.
What do I usually say when a podcast ends? Oh, yeah. If you want to comment on something that you've heard on this podcast, just visit the boards on negativeworld.org, and there's going to be a thread for this particular episode, and you can always chime in there. And it's always fun to read the comments. And if somehow... Like, if you're not a member of Negative World and you don't want to become one for some reason, because I guess we're just...
We smell, so that's something.
Oh, yeah. Also, yeah, there's the BO. You can always leave your comments. We've got a Twitter feed. It's at negative_world. And there's also a Facebook page. Just look for Negative World on Facebook.
Yep.
Yeah, also, if you would please go rate our podcast on iTunes. I think we're only missing like one person to give us a star rating for it to actually do something for us, like for it to show up and to actually maybe get people to see the podcast and click on it and listen to it and become fans, because that's what happens. All right, thank you guys for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thank you.
See you next time for the next episode.
See you later, everybody.
Cool. Later.
Night.
Night. Night.
And, all right, last Metroid in captivity. No, wait. All right.
That's so, a good save that.
Yeah, well, it's recorded.
All right.